Why is nobody talking about this? Real food, real natural food. Like, this is so simple. It makes so much sense. Yet it's not a thing, right? And even in CrossFit today, it's not as much of a thing as I feel like it should be.
You guys, thank you so much for tuning in today. I am super excited, you guys. You know, we bring on a lot of guests on the Dietitian's Dilemma. We talk to people in the ketogenic, the carnivore, and the low-carb community. You guys, I wanted to do something a little bit different. I wanted to bring on someone who started their own company, very successful. Colin, thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate you coming on.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, for our audience, if people aren't familiar with you or the company that you started, can you just touch a little bit on, like, how you started your company, why you started your company, and maybe a little bit about your own health journey?
Yeah. So every time I get asked this question, I'm trying to get better at making it shorter, you know, because obviously this goes back to like high school. This is like, I got interested in fitness because I wanted abs. And then that led me into like bodybuilding, men's health, that whole world. And then, you know, I was working out with some friends at the time and I just still couldn't get that last 10 pounds of stubborn belly fat off, right? And like, I've always been a kind of a leaner, skinnier gene type of guy. And so it was like, I'm like, what am I doing wrong here? You know, long story short, I eventually found CrossFit one day after doing the bodybuilding routine for a few years. And then CrossFit kind of sparked my interest, went down that rabbit hole, got certified, eventually opened a gym. You know, that was kind of my life for a long time, you know, very fitness focused. And then that, through that process, led was first a zone diet. And then that kind of got me the methodology of kind of counting blocks and having some kind of idea around tracking and macros, right? Which I think is useful to have, to build an intuitive sense for, although I think everybody should eventually evolve out of that, right? I did that for a while. And then I remember it was in the CrossFit Journal, which is a publication they were putting out. Somebody did an article on the paleo diet. I don't know if it was like Rob Wolf or someone that was promoting that, but I read it and just a light bulb moment went off. I was like, well, that's interesting. So if I eat foods that are natural to the human species, right, I get better results. And so I did it and then I did get better results. And then I was like, okay, this is a game changer. And I was kind of at the same time, like, why is nobody talking about this? Like real food, real natural food. Like this is so simple. It makes so much sense. Yet it's not a thing. Right. And even in CrossFit today, it's not as much of a thing as I feel like it should be. Right. You know, so I became obsessed at that point with cooking, food, nutrition, like supplements, everything. I just went deep, 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 deep into it. And that led me, you know, to basically everything I've been doing today. But the long story short is when I made that connection between quality of food and ingredients and supplements and my results and feeling better, looking better, performing better, that was like a first principle for me that since then is still, you know, integral to my life, right? And that kind of led to Wild Foods where I was like, well, there's all these supplements on the market and I have no idea how they're made. They don't put anything on the label. I don't know like where the ingredients come from. Like even to this day, there's pretty much no insight into it. And I went into another rabbit hole, right? Again, just pursuing my interests. It led me into this rabbit hole of how are supplements made? And, you know, like for example, whey protein was a product I was taking a lot and you just didn't know anything about the cows. You didn't know anything about how they lived or if they were grass fed or not, et cetera. So that basically led me into trying to find a grass-fed whey protein for myself. I wanted to find the best quality in the world. And I wanted to just kind of check that box off and feel like I'm taking the best way. Like it's good. I don't have to worry about it. Right. And just like, you know, one product at a time, I did that. And then I was like, well, maybe I can sell this online. Maybe someone else would be interested. And I did. I started selling on Amazon in 2015 in January. I did like $500 in sales with two products. And by the end of the year, we had, you know, 500,000 in sales. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I figure out what I'm going to do next. And like, you know, Amazon at the time was like Wild West. Like it was definitely right place, right time. But it was also some, you know, pursuing things that mattered to me for my own pursuit, right? I didn't go into it saying, I want to make money. I went into it saying, I want to understand, know, and learn so that I can apply in my life. And I just feel like anything we're going to be doing at this point in life, you know, kind of from the business perspective or the professional perspective, should be always trying to figure out what I now call the infinite game, which is kind of a concept that's been popular. Simon Sinek wrote a book about it. But for me, it's like, I want to do the things that I'm going to do every single day. And then I want to figure out how to make money from those things. Right. And so I've been fortunate and I've also put in a lot of work and, you know, these things kind of fell together. But at the same time, it's like the harder I work, the luckier I get or whatever. So that's kind of the origin story. And we can kind of pull on whatever thread that you want.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting because I don't think a lot of people understand, and this is something that, you know, I learned, gosh, many years ago, supplements, a lot of people think if I take a supplement, you know, I turn it over on the back, that it absolutely has what it says on the label, but supplements are not regulated by the FDA. So I can literally sell you, you know, a bottle of calcium and it legally doesn't have to have any calcium in it. That blew my mind when I heard that. So, yep. You know, I think a lot of people assume that, you know, if it's on the shelf, if it's in the store, it's quality, right? And mm-hmm. I'm sure like, said, can you talk just a little bit about that? Because I think, you know, some people have told me like, oh, it doesn't really matter, you know, type of thing.
Yeah, no, this applies to the food industry as well, though. Like,
yeah,
like something like even an organic label, which we have organic certified products, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's good or on the same standard as other products. Like there's just a lot to it. And, you know, we could talk about this for the whole hour, but I kind of use a heuristic of, there's two heuristics I use. I use one to which the bigger the company, the bigger scale they have, the lower the quality, because it's literally impossible to reach millions and millions of people with food. And I mean, supplements are a little bit more standardized. You can kind of mass produce them, but there are constraints even on that, because at the farm level, if you're getting the really high quality stuff, they're going to hit constraints. Whereas the mass produced cheap stuff coming out of China is always available on demand, right? So like there is a little bit of where that heuristic kicks in for whether it's food or mass produced eggs, for example, or whether it's mass produced vitamin C powder, right? Like. Sure. There's always going to be constraints, and the bigger the scale, the like almost without a doubt, you can just assume that if they're one of the top brands in the world servicing millions of customers, it's not quality. Like that's just kind of the heuristic I use, right? Like I don't go to Walmart to buy supplements, you know, or even food for that matter. So right? Kind of the same principle. My second heuristic is, which I hope I can remember because the first one, so it's, it's scale bigger. Yeah, smaller the better, right? Oh, and then so the second one is really building a relationship with a brand. So in food, we kind of, you know, a lot of my listeners in your audience as well probably get the idea of like knowing your farmer, right? Like that's not a catch-all because you can have farmers that don't do it the right way or whatever. But when you really get to know them and you buy from them consistently, you test the products because you're eating them, right? And usually over time, if there's something glaring, it's going to stick out. Like for example, we buy these eggs. There's two eggs we get locally. One was a corn-free, soy-free feed to the chicken, like literally the best eggs we've ever found. We did those for a while. And then like, I think there was a supply issue or we might've moved or whatever, so we couldn't get it delivered. And then we went to some other eggs and we noticed a legit, for Allison, for example, gut issue, for me, gut issue, right? We could feel it. I would get headaches. And like if I eat too many eggs, the whites really get to me. I feel nauseous. It never happened with the corn-free, soy-free eggs. So what I'm trying to say is, if you're buying products consistently and you're trusting your suppliers, and this is true of a supplement brand or a food brand, and you do that over a long enough period of time, you're going to be able to develop intuition for like, I mean, even if you're buying something from someone you trust, maybe they're supplementing with feed in the winter time and like the beef is just not as good, for example. And your body will really pick up on that the more in tune you get. So those are the two things that I try to, just from a broad perspective, explain to people, like get to know brands and trust them. Right. And if quality changes, investigate it or maybe try another brand or whatever, you know, and then the bigger the scale, the bigger the brand, the less likely it is to be quality.
No, I totally hear that. Cause yeah, we buy from a local farmer and they actually, you know, with the COVID pandemic, they said now they're at like max capacity. Like this is all we can do, yeah, you know? Yeah. And
that's a good sign. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, and so, you know, you said you took your company from, you know, $500 to over $500,000. And, you know, I've had a lot of people reach out to me and be like, you know, I'm interested in writing a book or I'm interested in pursuing a passion. And I think you really hit the nail on the head with saying like, you know, ideally you have this passion. This is what I want to do. This is what drives me. And if you can find a way to make money off that or to live, you know, make a living off that, that's excellent. So what tips for people or what, you know, someone who says, okay, I want to get started. Like what has made you successful?
Oh,
I mean, I could probably like do 20 hours on this, but yeah, maybe a few key tips.
So I love talking about this stuff, and I've been thinking about it for years. Okay. Because I've always had this kind of growth mindset, very iconoclastic, very like didn't do well in school. And I was basically led to believe that I'm going to be a loser because I didn't do good in school. Right. And then I woke up to this entrepreneurship, you know, and obviously this is trending. The internet was trending at the time. And so this has opened up. Like I remember when I was high school and even college, nobody talked about like owning a business. I didn't even know you could own a business. I thought like only corporations could do it. And then I didn't know what a corporation was. Like, it's not like it is today where everyone's incentive, you know, encouraged to like build their own brand or whatever. And so that's amazing. And I think everyone alive today should be super excited about that. Okay. So, but what I've been also thinking about is how do I give advice and that's based in, you know, real life and based in the unfortunate reality that not everybody can think and act like the 1%. And so this sounds elitist, but there's also some nuggets in here that we have to kind of think about. And again, the truth sometimes hurts. And I want to give people the hard, real truth as good as I can, because not anything else isn't serving them, right? Fluff and whatever and sugarcoating and beating around the bush does not serve anybody. Okay. I don't know what set me apart. A lot of environmental factors, a lot of genetics, a lot of opportunity, this, whatever, right? But there, you know, this question is hard to answer because, like, I could, you know, hindsight's 2020. I could pick out things that I did and be like, yeah, that was amazing. There's a lot of luck involved in everything, like right place, right time. But what you'll see with entrepreneurs that are successful over the long run is the really good entrepreneurs. I mean, they might start 10 companies and fail with 9 of them, and it might take 10 to 15 years, but then they're eventually successful. I believe that to be true. Now, I also believe that not everybody should be an entrepreneur. I used to think that. Now, in the new digital age, and we're kind of getting in the weeds with this, but moving forward, I think everybody should at least be able to be a freelancer or a remote employee, right? And with 2020, that's opened it up. A lot of companies are like being open to that idea, and that's amazing. And now you can negotiate and say, I want to work remote or whatever. And if you're a knowledge worker, right, you should be able to, at the very least, control where you work from and your hours and all that. You should not have to show up to an office and be tied down geographically or to the clock. Okay. So that's just like a bit of side advice for everyone moving forward. Like, put that in your mind, start working towards that. You'd be amazed what you can accomplish at, you know, as an employee, even if you ask for it or you plant the seed and you know, I've had employees for years and it's just amazing. Half the time they don't even ask me for things. And then they say, well, I got to leave because of this. And I'm like, why don't you ask me like a year ago? You'd be having this thing the whole time, like squeaky wheel gets the grease. So as far as success goes though, that I'm trying to preface this advice with, the reality is if you want to write a book, you'd already be writing a book. That's kind of like, it just is what it is. Like, there's nothing preventing you from taking your phone and opening up a notepad and every day writing for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever, and building a writing routine. Okay. So this idea that like, I want to write a book, for most people, what they're telling themselves is I want to be a published author. They don't actually want to write a book. Okay. If you want to write a book, you'd be writing a book. So that's just something like, be honest with yourself, become self-aware of the stories you're telling yourself. And maybe that's a first step in breaking these stories and the really bad thought patterns that a lot of people have, right? Now, the book specifically though, if you want to write a book, you can self-publish a book in a weekend, all right? I just actually published one. I don't have one next to me, but it's 50 Tips for Real Food. And it's a short book where it's basically every chapter is like a couple paragraphs. And I wanted to just do this to get back into the publishing game, get my head into the game. And I probably wrote it in a month and I rewrote it like 7 times because really when it comes to writing a book, it's all about editing. It's not about the writing part, it's about the editing part, you know, as you know. And I finally, so I finished it, edited it, whatever, did a simple book cover in like a free online design app. Like, it's amazing the resources you have if you just take the action and do it and figure it out, right? So you could write a first draft and it could be a bad book and you could publish it in a weekend through Kindle's publishing platform. It's quite literally as simple as uploading a doc file, which you can also do in Google Docs for free again, like literally no cost here. And then you can upload it. And then you have a book cover that you can actually design in Amazon. They give you tools to do that. And then they'll approve it, which I don't even know if there's any real guidelines. Like, you pretty much can publish anything and you have a book published. So it's like, I don't know if that really answers the question, but I want people to just become aware of their thoughts and desires, because a lot of times what they want is they want the net result and they don't want to actually do the work and do the thing to have that net result. And that's fine, right? Because some people think they want to be a writer, but they don't. Like, you know, when you're a writer and that becomes your life and, you know, you have like 2 hours a day where you fight, you know, writer's block and all these different things, like, that might not be the life you want. Just because you want a book written doesn't mean you really want to be a writer. So like, we have to really connect the actual work, what we're doing on a daily basis, to the end result. And that's why I focus on like, what do you like doing? What are you good at? A combination of those things. And what are you already doing, right? What do you already do and not, you don't get paid for? Like, cause that in some ways probably connected or closely aligned with what your infinite game could be, which is infinite game. I didn't define that earlier, is a game that you play anyways, right? An infinite game you play forever. And there's no winning or losing. So if you're a writer and it's really your identity, you'd already be writing a book because you're going to write for the rest of your life, right? That just is what it is, right? And you can develop these habits and you build these. These aren't set like based on your upbringing or whatever, but you really have to understand the mechanisms at play and where to focus your time. And, you know, test being a writer for 30 days, like an hour. Can you do an hour a day, right? Can you just literally write an hour a day, no matter what, for 30 days and then do it? And maybe you loved it, maybe you didn't, you know, and you can kind of go from there. So I think it's kind of, I think I answered your question. I don't know.
Yeah, fantastic. I was just thinking, like, when you were talking about that, like, I'm a runner. I've been a distance runner since I was 14, you know, I'm 37 and nobody ever tells me to run. Like, I get up every single day. I love it. Something I'm drawn to. I heard Wayne Gretzky, the famous hockey player. He was at a conference, and a parent went up and asked him and said, "How can I get my son to love, you know, to want to be good at hockey and love hockey like you do?" And he just said, "Can't. Like, if they don't, you can't. You know, he's like, you couldn't pull me off the ice. We have that, you know, to be successful. I do think you have to kind of start with that like innate desire, something like deep within you, you know. And like you said, whether that's writing or whether that's starting a business or whether that's being an entrepreneur." Or, you know, running. As far as growing your company, have you found things, you know, I'm sure there's been some trial and error, you know, maybe with different products or different marketing. Are there any specific, you know, like I said, I hate to say tips, because I'm sure, like, you know, you've learned a bunch of different things, but is there anything that you have found that's really contributed to your success as someone who owns a business?
Yeah. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you have to become a couple things, but I'm trying to focus on the first principles here, like the really big things. You have to become a reader. You have to have a thirst for knowledge. You have to embrace mistakes, right? You hear that all the time. Embrace failure, whatever. The point isn't to fail. The point is to win and make money. Let's be clear about what entrepreneurship is, right? And ideally, you connect that to something you feel good about and you're servicing customers and you're improving people's lives. That is what the best entrepreneurs do, right? You look at someone like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Warren Buffett. These guys, they will do what they do to the end of their life. And even if they were just millionaires or made a little bit of money, they'd still be doing the thing they're doing. Like, they have a broader mission. They have literally figured out what their infinite game is, right? And that's why they're so successful, okay? So you have to become a learner. You have to read a lot, okay? I don't really know anybody successful or even interesting as a person that doesn't read a lot. It just is what it is. Unfortunately, it is what it is. And I mean, like, books, the top books of all time, not just articles and, you know, short bits on Instagram. Like, you really got to go to the best ideas that humanity has produced thus far in 2020. And you need to consume them over and over and over and over and over again. I just started rereading How to Win Friends and Influence People. And I read it maybe 10 years ago. It's literally speaking to me today in a completely different way than when I was 25. Like, it's, I feel like it's a game changer right now, especially since at this point in my life, I'm spending a lot more time on people and building my network. And when I was 25, I was just kind of like entrepreneurship, build more of like a solo quest. But now I'm opening up and realizing the importance of relationships, and I want to build my network and all these things. And I'm rereading this book, and it's like literally blowing my mind, even though I've already read the book. Right. And I'm going to read that book probably every quarter for the rest of my life at this point, because I've really identified how that matters so much, how people matter so much, how relationships matter so much. So that's the other thing. Entrepreneurship, people. You have to be able to motivate them, inspire them. You have to be able to learn how to praise them. A section in that book actually is like, and it's something I need to work on. You basically want to always avoid criticizing if you can and only praise. And that's hard when you have employees and like they just aren't doing what they need to do and you've repeated yourself 20 times. Like, this is definitely a delicate thing to get right. But business is a people, it's a people game, right? And so you have to really like people. You have to really, you know, figure out how to deal with them, how to motivate them, how to inspire them. Like, how do you handle people when things screw up and they don't do what you said, even when you give them explicit instructions? Like, you have to also become a stoic in a way. Like, you have to really detach what happens around you and what people do from what you think they should have done and what results you want. And you have to always focus on, okay, the only thing I can control is my thoughts and my actions. So this thing didn't work out the way I wanted it. Okay. So let's reevaluate. Instead, what you see, people get stuck in victim mentality. They get stuck in, woe is me. This person did this, or I did this. They get obsessed with, I lost this much money, whatever. They get stuck in sunken costs, which is a fallacy that we get stuck into, where we invest a lot of money or time into something. And when it doesn't go our way, you know, we tend to be, we're blind to what's happening. Maybe we should pull the plug, or maybe we should try something else. Instead, we just try to double down and do more of what's already not working because we're so stuck in the past. Like, the past doesn't exist. And I know we can get philosophical with this, but another thing about being an entrepreneurship, like the having employees, having company, I'm not just talking about like solo freelancers or remote employees. Like, to be a real true entrepreneur, you have to become a philosopher. I mean, you just have to understand everything, and it's brutal, and it teaches you things that you don't want to learn and when you don't want to learn it. And it's just not something most people should do, to be honest, right? But the things that make you a good entrepreneur make you good at life too, right? So I just feel like all my entrepreneur friends are the most self-aware, not necessarily happy, but like a lot of them can find happiness in that way, because happiness is its own topic. But it does really get you good at life because it just forces you, like iron sharpens iron. It forces you to deal with things that you probably wouldn't have done on your own.
Yeah. And it sounds like it also forces you to really, like you said, to be able to not get emotionally overwhelmed, really separate emotion. And I agree with you. I think we constantly have to be looking forward. Like if you make a mistake, I think people really dwell on it, or as opposed to, like you said, like saying, okay, what can we do next? It's like, well, we have to fix this and all this time and energy here. And then you talked a little bit about failures. And I know that's kind of a cliche, like, oh, we have to learn from our failures.
Yep.
But I think it is key and it is crucial because we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to have failures. You know, certainly like with writing a book, you're going to have edits and chapters, I'm sure, with your products.
Negative feedback. You're going to get feedback that you're not going to like.
And I feel like you talked about it a little bit already, but I do also think that the one other thing I guess we could touch on a little bit is like leading people. You know, it can be really challenging to lead people. And a lot of people who, you know, watch my YouTube, they have businesses, they have employees, or they're trying to become somebody who leads people. So yeah, I think you touched on it, but can you touch just a little bit more on what you've learned about, you know, being a leader?
Yeah. So we just had a customer service issue that came up before the podcast that I was dealing with my main customer service person. And she kind of thought I was accusing her, right? And obviously I don't recommend doing things that are contentious over email or text because it's always worse. So that's actually first principle. Don't ever send those angry emails or those angry texts. Just don't do it. Or even if they're borderline, just don't do it. Talk to somebody. It's a tough one because everyone's personality is different. Everyone's style is different. But like I would go back to how to win friends and influence people. I mean, if you want to lead people, inspire them, and just not make your life a living hell as an entrepreneur, you should read that book like every other, just over and over and over again. The second you finish it, read again, right? But some of the core things are you have to get people to want to do the things. Like if you want them to do something, you have to get them to want to do it almost as much or more than you want them to do it, right? So you have to really, really focus on their perspective. You have to praise as much as possible, right? And use positive reinforcement, right? And you have to avoid negative reinforcement and criticizing as much as possible. And that's really a hard thing because I'm more myself focusing on problem solution. But when you're dealing with people, you can't always think like an entrepreneur. You have to think like an actual leader, right? Because when entrepreneurs have problems, we go into analyzing mode. Like we're just trying to figure this out. This is just a critical thinking data, like information, whatever. And then make a cold, ruthless decision about what's the best course of action, right? With people though, people aren't analytical robots. Right? They're emotional creatures. Okay. So you cannot take that entrepreneur brain and apply that to people. So I would just say some things I'm working on and, you know, it's hard to look back on the past because hindsight is 2020. I can make up all these stories about things I did or didn't do. I don't know. This is honestly for me been the hardest thing is the people part. And I actually tell people like, if you can avoid it, don't have employees. Right. I do believe that. Right. And nowadays, you know, use remote employees and contractors and do things like that as much as you can. You use technology and leverage things. And, you know, if and when you have employees, treat them very well. Spend the time to communicate, get them to understand what the mission is, the goals are. I think one thing from employees I remember reading recently is a lot of employees feel like they don't have direction. They're just like, I think as founders or managers, we have this idea like the vision's clear to us, but it's not clear to employees. And we have to really, really communicate that to them and connect it to a bigger mission. Are we helping people? What difference is the company making? Thus your work is making, right? And really, really help and refine that and stay on top of that over time. And then, you know, culture is a thing. Building culture is tough. I guess the things I'm working on are more praise, less criticism, not being too kind of, you know, entrepreneurial in my approach to employees. I have to really spend time and try to get them to understand and connect it to the larger mission and everything. And I mean, it's a tough one, honestly. Like you can probably tell I'm struggling with this because this is something I'm also learning and being aware to. But I mean, I guess if you remove your ego, if you can detach as much as you can from the emotional side of it, use a lot more questions. That's another one. So the Socratic method and using questions this is just a thing that all humans should be doing more. In business is even more important. We talk at people. We tend to talk at employees. We talk at vendors. We talk at customers. Like we want to tell them the things that we think are right or whatever. And like they've done research on this. Most people, you might tell them a few sentences and they like remember one word or two out of the whole thing. Like I think the quote is something like the biggest barrier to communication is the like, kind of illusion that it's actually happened, right? Like most people don't actually hear what you say, but you think they did because you told them, right? So that's what my best answer to that question. It's definitely a work in progress.
Yeah, no, and that's really interesting. And I've had just recently had worked in two different places. Like I recently left healthcare. I was at a particular hospital for a little over a year. And then I worked in a kind of small local like butchery place. And obviously it was so interesting. I mean, completely different environments going from a dietitian at an acute care center to basically an entry level job, you know, making sausages, grinding up meats. And I can't tell you how different though, when the culture was like, in, you know, when I was working in the small butchery, or, you know, boss would tell me like, oh, hey, good job. And everyone seemed to be kind of on the same page. Feeling as an employee, it was night and day different. You know, the hospital I was kind of used to being getting like, oh, I only heard things if I messed up, like, well, you didn't chart this or why did it belong? And so you kind of have this negative whatever. And it is really interesting. But yeah, that's key. And that, I like that you said too, like, we do want to talk at people. I feel like often I have so much information. I'm so excited. Right. This is what you need to, versus maybe even asking questions like, hey, what matters to you? Like, what do you think about this type of thing? So yeah, no, that's great. And I also appreciate just your honesty. Cause I sometimes think people just get really bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about the end results. Like, oh, I want to make a lot of money from this business versus like, well, do you really want to spend 12 hours a day reading, digging, you know, troubleshooting? So, you know, I mean, for people are interested in starting a business, writing a book, doing anything challenging. You know, I had someone reach out to me and say, you know, I think I'm interested in running my first ultra marathon. And it was like, okay, well, it's not all hearts and roses, right? There is a lot of work. And I do think that, you know, a lot of people have to really, you kind of need to decide, like, do I love this? Am I invested in this? And then even like you said, giving it a trial. Like if you think like, yeah, I'm all in, you know, take 30 days. Are you going to love, you know, reading these books, you know, finding out what it takes to maybe start a business, get a loan, whatever it is to do. So yeah. Do you have any other follow-up or any other thing you'd want to
do? I have something on that. I want that you brought to mind. So the idea of the infinite game, it's so powerful. Now, the way I answer this, and I've been answering this the past few months, I'm kind of figuring out like what my next thing is. I've been thinking about getting into education, coaching. There's a lot of different things that I could do. My problem has always been too many ideas and not enough time, right? And as I've, you know, become more wise as an entrepreneur, I've put the brakes on, whereas before I would just start things. Now I've been really like anything that I do, obviously with two kids now and all these different things, I'm very, very, very careful about what I start. And so I've been spending a lot of time thinking about this. The question that keeps coming up, and I've been asking myself this for years, because I've always made I've always believed I wanted to have money and be successful, but I also have known that I want to be happy and have like, I want to have peace of mind and I want to have just a in control, calm life. I've just recognized that early on. And I also recognize through different successes over the years that money doesn't bring you that. And a lot of times more money, as Biggie Small says, means more problems, more money, more problems, right? And so I've been very, very aware of this. And the question that I want everyone to ask themselves is, if you had $1 billion in your bank account and you woke up tomorrow, okay, what would you do? So my answer to this question is, even if I decided to do a bunch of traveling, like take a break for a while, I would very quickly get bored and return to my work. What work though would I do? If I had $1 billion right now, think about it. If you had $1 billion, what would you do on a daily basis? Would you go serve the poor? Would you go build the next Elon Musk company because you want to like get to Mars faster or compete with him? Right? Would you record podcasts every day or do YouTube videos every day or do content or write or read? And so that's actually my answer. I would do podcasts. I would actually be focused on spreading these big ideas that I've learned to help save people and give people the massive opportunity that is available before them in 2020, because I believe that a lot of the news cycle and a lot of the politics and the nonsense that goes on in this country and the media is rotting people's brain. And I think it's a travesty, because they're going to pass along those rotted bad ideas and behaviors to their kids. They're going to pass on the sickness, as we know, being healthpreneurs, right? We know that, you know, the hardest thing to overcome is your parents having crappy food and basically feeding that to you for years. And then you're 16 and you want to be lean and you've been set up for failure your whole life. Like, that just breaks my heart, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So for me, it's like my infinite game is, I want to help people change by breaking bad thought patterns and creating new ones, replacing new ones. And so like my next phase of my life is some form of education around that. And so I would still do videos. I would still do podcasts. I would still do my social media, write and do things like that. So every day I do that no matter what. That's part of my morning routine, even though it's actually not generating any revenue right now. Like, and it's loosely connected with my current business, but I know that it's an infinite game and I know the ideas matter and I know it's what I want to do anyways and I would do anyways. So I'm already doing it. I'm already living it. And from there, what's great is like when you do things, when you take action and you build a daily routine, and actually Scott Adams, the Dilbert guy, he's got a good quote on this. He talks about how like goals are for losers. What you need is process. And that's another thing that's connected to infinite game, because infinite game is you do it forever. So what is a process? A process is about doing. A goal is about getting somewhere, right? If you remove goals and you have process, you actually get places you can't even fathom and it'll blow your mind, right? That's what's so amazing about it, right? Yeah. So if you can start your infinite game today and you start playing that infinite game, you start doing things, you're going to get all these connections and opportunities that you could not have foresaw, right? And that's kind of goes back to the idea of like, you want to write a book or you want to have written a book. You don't actually want to write a book, right? Yeah. So start writing, like literally after this podcast or whatever, write your book and then keep that up for 30 days. And then your next goal should be 31 days and 32 days, and then on and on and on. Your goal should be the process. The goal isn't actually getting somewhere. The goal should not even be to write a book. The goal should become a writer, because that's an infinite game. That's a process. And if you truly fall in love with writing, you'll be successful. It might take you 20 or years, but at that point it won't even matter, because you'll have so ingrained the process, and you'll so be playing your infinite game that, again, like the money, the accolades and all these things, they won't matter. The people that are most successful and most fulfilled in life are the people that are playing their infinite game, and the money and the rewards and the accolades or whatever, it comes and it goes as it goes with everything. And it usually doesn't matter. And they will keep doing it regardless if people are paying attention or not, and whether they have a bunch of money or not. But I promise you, there is a way for there to be 7 billion monopolies on the planet. There's 7 billion personal brands, 7 billion individuals that are the best at being themselves. And that's what we need more of.
Yeah. I don't think I have much to add to that. It's just, that's perfect. You know, it's so much of people want to know, like, what's the secret? And it's time on task. It's process. It's doing, you know, over and over and over again. It's not sexy. There's no like magical formula. And yeah, a lot of people will say like, oh, I want to lose 50 pounds, or, oh, I want to write a book, I want to start a business, that, you know, that's really irrelevant. What you shouldn't be kind of thinking about is, I want to sit down from 8 to noon and write, and then take a break till 1 and then write till 5, you know, like actually setting up those habits, those processes. Another really great book I like, just The Power of Habit. I've read it several times, and yep, just, you know, you how crucial those are and how you can literally shift your entire life. You know, we think that everything we do is these like well thought out things, but a lot of things we do are just habits. So like teaching you how to create these habits to actually suit your life. And then, yeah, I was even thinking about my own running. You know, I did a ultra marathon this past November, and it was amazing. The whole process leading up to it was incredible, and the race went really well. But when it was over, like my first thought was like, okay, what's next? You know, it wasn't like, yay, this big goal, I'm done. Throw it away. It was like, you know, when you love something, you're just kind of like constantly looking forward, you know, constantly moving forward. So yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much for all of that.
I have something to add on that about your running that will help illustrate what we're talking about. So you're a runner, thus running is your infinite game.
Yes.
But you will play finite games within your infinite game. The finite games are the races, right? So you can have goals, right? But they should be with only supporting and a part of your infinite game, right? That's kind of a way to think about this. Cause I'm not saying you shouldn't have finite games. Like, yeah, writing a book is a goal, but you know, really like the really good books are going to come from those that are writing as a part of their infinite game. They're going to come from the real writers. You know, like if you want to just have a book written, you should hire somebody like Tucker Max's company Scribe, and they'll interview you and write a book for you. And it'll cost you $10,000 or $20,000, but you'll have written a book. Right. If it's just a marketing tool, that's fine. But if you actually want to be a writer, right. And these are ways to think about it. Like this is how you have to think about these things. There's nothing wrong with wanting to have written a book or have a published book, but it's probably not what you think. You don't need to watch a podcast and like get advice from somebody. like figure out if you want to be a writer or not, test it out. Right. And then if that doesn't work, then find another avenue. And you can still find another avenue to having a published book, but then be honest with yourself that you're not a writer and you're not like, that's not going to be your thing. That's fine. Okay. Now, so finite games, infinite games, you're a runner no matter what, right? You'll probably do that forever for as long as your body will let you. Okay. And so there was another really good one in there that I forgot, but I'd go off a tangent just like that. So I'll kick it back to you.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, that's really all I had. Do you have anything else about your company? Like as far as your, you know, the company that you started, do you have anything that you're looking forward to specifically in 2021? Any like, you know, new products, any new developments, anything that you want to talk about?
Yeah, we're launching new products all the time. We just came out with a couple new really high quality products that took us almost a year to develop. What I'm most excited about Wild Foods, which for, you know, those of you listening or watching that don't know us, we source foods and supplements as close to nature as possible based on like what I talked about at the beginning of the show is like my real food methodology, like as close to nature as possible. Okay. That's what we do though. And what I have said for a long time now is that I'm just trying to use high quality foods and supplements to educate real food, get that into your brain, get quality into your brain, and also get habit into your brain. So a lot of things we're talking about, it's all connected because, you know, if you are taking like a Wild Multi that just came out, for example, and you take that every day for 30 days or whatever, but then you're eating junk food or you're eating out all the time and seed oils and all these other things, like you should not be spending any money on our products. You should be just eating real food, cooking at home. Then when you have that down, you can supplement, add it to your diet to help you get to the next level and to build consistency around your routine. Right. So that for me, supplements and foods and like these functional foods are, should be something that helps you build a consistent habit that is focused on quality, real nutrition, the way your biology is designed. And then doing that forever, like turning that into your infinite game. Like that's like an infinite game for health. Like it should be based on cooking real food, highest quality you can, avoiding eating out as much as possible. Don't eat processed food, avoid sugar, avoid grains and seed oils, you know? And so what I'm most excited about is just getting that real food message and getting that, you know, that real habit that, you know, the ancestral mindset, I call it, getting outside, moving a little bit, you know, doing all the basics of what makes a healthy human animal and doing that every single day forever. So, you know, I'm always hesitant to like recommend a product or do whatever. And I know that, you know, people sometimes like that, but really if I would say to answer that question in a very strange way, I would say, if you're not already cooking every meal at home, don't come to my website, like just focus on that. And then if you want a little bit of support, and we do have some salt that can help you with that in different products, then yeah, just come to the website and check out what we got.
I appreciate that. I mean, that's a really honest answer. And I do think, unfortunately, you know, having worked in healthcare for such a long time, many people will want to continue eating their really poor diet and just have a pill
doesn't
or a supplement.
Doesn't.
Like, you know, supplements are kind of at the top of the pyramid. Let's yep. build with like base of real food and then get some movement going. And then, you know, like you said, establishing that habit of having those good supplements. But once you've gotten that, the yes. other stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Yeah. No, that's fantastic. And we'll put your website and all that in our YouTube show notes for sure.
Great. We're going to get right back to the show. Give me 1 minute. I got to plug the betterhuman.school. Of course, I know I sound like a broken record, but like I said, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm passionate about. And I know that we can make a huge mega difference in our lives individually and then those around us by leading through example. The reason we have a sick society and that only 10% of America is considered metabolically healthy is because monkey see, monkey do. There's a lot of history here. If you want to look about the booming after World War II, what happened in America and the luxury goods and the consumerism that's just run rampant and how we've taken that to the next level with processed food and now pharmaceuticals and big corporate interests, it's no surprise that America is getting fatter and sicker every single year and more depressed. And now technology has been thrown in the mix to which people can be distracted on a daily, instant by instant basis. They can spend their years in a distracted, zombie-like, screen-addicted state. And what we need more than ever is a focus on the principal foundational concepts that drive human behavior, success, and happiness in a modern world. And that's what the Better Human program is all about. So head over to betterhuman.school to get started today. Founding 250 members, lifetime access, crazy amazing deal. Hope to see you in there. Let's get back to it. Well, Michelle, appreciate that. So is it my turn, right?
Yeah, let's okay, do
so
it.
The dietitian's dilemma.
Yes.
Okay. Give me the synopsis and I will probably pick something from what you tell me. And then we'll just riff from there for probably 20 minutes.
All right. Fantastic. So what the book is, it's called The Dietitian's Dilemma. And it starts with my personal story. So a little bit about my history. I actually had a really serious eating disorder when I was 12. I was 5 feet tall, 57 pounds, ended up in inpatient treatment for over 2 months, was given about a 10% chance to survive. So pretty grim outlook. And, you know, obviously it was able to kind of work through that, but it kind of gives my history. I always thought I'd write an entire book about what it's like to have anorexia. Cause it's just, I've read some things, but I don't feel like anything has really gotten to like the absolute despair that we've had there. But, you know, I saw how powerful nutrition was. You know, I started to get my health back, but I suffered with severe anxiety throughout my early adolescence, ended up having osteoporosis in my early adolescence as well. And, you know, was on some bone density medications and actually started running. I started running in high school. I had gained enough weight to be able to participate in sports. And I just fell in love with it. Found I had a knack for it. Was very successful. Walked on to college running. But I was, you know, I was eating kind of the standard American diet. I was eating a lot of grains, a lot of carbs. I just thought I need these foods to really fuel my life, my body. And ended up having a pretty severe stress fracture in college. So that kind of ended my collegiate running career. Mm. So I ended up becoming a dietitian though. I wanted to help people with nutrition. And even through the dietetic internship, I saw things that didn't necessarily make sense. You know, you'd look, people had just been in a traumatic car accident and you'd flip over tube feeding bags and you're like, should we be feeding people, you know, the first ingredients are like maltodextrin, high fructose corn syrup, canola oil, and should we be giving diabetics 90 grams of carbs per meal and dosing them with insulin? And I was just immediately pegged as this like very difficult dietetic student, like, Michelle asks all these questions. And, but you know, you're young, so you just kind of go along with it. I just struggled because we had have patients come in and they just weren't getting better. You know, I'd have people, maybe they'd eat a little more fiber or a little whatever, and they might lose a little bit of weight. But in an acute care setting, we're not just seeing people that are overweight. I mean, I'm seeing wounds down to the bone, you know, amputations from diabetes, kidney failure, people with heart disease. And I had people that had strokes as young as their early 40s, just all kinds of things. And it kind of starts to break you. And, you know, during this time, kind of my saving grace was my running. Throughout my early 20s and into my 30s, I ran 12 marathons, qualified for Boston 12 times. But then I really wanted to qualify for the Olympic trials. So I wanted to run under 2:45. That's a 6:17 pace. And I ran 2:54. So I was getting closer. But then all of a sudden, I wasn't recovering from workouts. I'd go for a workout and it would take me days to recover. And I was waking up the middle of the night with muscle pain. And so I'm like, what's going on? So I reached out to a few sports dietitians, and kind of like we talked about a little bit earlier with you, they told me I needed more carbohydrates. I mean, I was eating 350 grams a day. They said, well, you need 400 or 500 grams. And I just doubled down. I doubled down on a very bad behavior. And, you know, as you can imagine, well, I would go out for runs and I would start getting cold sweats. I would come home and just feel dizzy and nauseous. I would go through my workday, and even though I was eating so often, I was just chronically hungry. You know, I would start to have panic attacks. I mean, I'd always struggled with anxiety, but I was genuinely feeling depressed, and kind of like my come to Jesus moment. I woke up in the middle of the night with just like searing muscle pain. And people asked me like, well, were you running a lot? No, I was running about 20 miles a week at that point. So not very much. So 2 a.m, drive to 7-Eleven, get 30 pounds of ice, put it in the bathtub. I'm sitting in an ice bath. Now by this time it's like 3 a.m. And so my wife comes in and is like, maybe we should do something differently. And it was like, yes, it is beyond time to do something differently. And so I just decided like, look, I'm just not going to be a runner anymore. Like clearly I'm too old. My body is broken. And at that point I thought, well, if I'm not going to be a runner, why not follow a ketogenic diet? Because I knew kind of intuitively that eating all these carbohydrates was not making me feel good. But there's so much fear mongering among, you know, the dietetic community, and with the nutrition guidelines say we need all these whole grains. Then I came across the carnivore diet, you know, just the all meat, salt, fat. And I thought like, what a great idea. Why don't I do that for 30 days? Just with the goal of like, let's stop this muscle pain. Mm-hmm. And of course my wife was like, no, this is eating disordered. Like, this is not a good idea. So we thought about it, but I decided to do it. Like, let's just, you know, give this 30 days. And after 3 weeks, my wife actually said, can you come sit with me? And she said, you know, this is the best your anxiety has been in the 11 years that I've known you. Like everything started to level out. And at that point, I honestly became very angry, you know, because I was like, I've healed so quickly. Like I no longer had muscle pain. I was having steady energy. My anxiety, three weeks. And I slept through the night, 3.5 weeks. That hadn't happened in months. And just, I decided, well, it's kind of funny. I wasn't running at all. And my wife, she appreciates reading in solitude, was like, hey, you're annoying me. You should go for a run. Just kind of jokingly said it. And I mean, that had been such a part of my identity for so long. And I'd kind of given up the idea of being a competitive runner. And so I just kind of joked like, all right, I'm going to go jog around the block. I'll be back like a couple miles. And I left the house and I ran for an hour, like easy, you know, zero carbs. And that's when the wheels started turning in my head. And I said like, what is going on? And so I decided I was just going to spend the next year of my life diving into the clinical trials. What do we know about low carb diets? Because all I'd ever heard as a dietitian is maybe they're good if you have epilepsy, but there's, you know, they're dangerous, whatever. And I could not believe how much research we had on specifically on diabetes. I mean, we can reverse type 2 diabetes in 8 days with a low carbohydrate diet. I mean, I have people in my office or in the hospital 20 years, you know. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to pick conditions for the book. It goes through 5 chapters, you know, it's my story, diabetes, mental disorders. I think we have a lot of anecdotal stories and evidence for like bipolar, depression, yep, anxiety, eating disorder. Once again, going back to like breaking the cycle of binge eating and, you know, bulimia, anorexia, orthorexia, sarcopenia. So muscle wasting in the elderly is a huge problem. Heart disease. There's so much fear mongering around high LDL. And then I have a getting started chapter. I've got 20 testimonies. I've had people reach out to me. So I have a little bit about my running. Mm-hmm. And that's the book, you know, and it's got a happy ending. Obviously my childhood was challenging, but I did run, like I said earlier in this podcast, I ran my first ultra marathon. It was supposed to be in May. That got canceled with COVID. Mm-hmm. Then October got canceled. But it did happen November 7th. I ran a 6-hour race. So it's just time 6 hour, who can ever run the furthest. I ran 44.63 miles. So that's an 8:04 pace for 6 hours. And I won the race.
Wow.
So I went from a little over 12 ago, not being able to run 2 miles and crippled with anxiety, to ran 44.63 miles. And I'm the happiest I've ever been. And so my only goal, kind of like you said, I don't want to tell people what to think. You know, I have no stock in this game. People are welcome to eat however they want, but I want people to have information and the option. You know, I've interviewed a lot of people for my channel and these testimonies. I want people to know there's a different way. You can eat differently and it can completely transform your health, you know? So that's the book.
Yeah. Let's just take a moment to talk about dogma, indoctrination, and the status quo bias. Okay. Now this,
yes,
no matter where, you know, you can apply all these ideas to what's happening in 2020, but we won't even go there. But if you look at the medical establishment, right, which a lot of people call sick care, okay, multi-billion dollar industry, all right, like, and let's be clear, it's profit-driven industry, okay? That's what people don't realize. They think it's like altruistic or something. No, hospitals make tons of money. Pharmaceuticals make profit for shareholders, okay? So you immediately have a profit. Yeah, exactly. You have a profit incentive to keep things the way they are. Okay. And so like, what's crazy is how we have so many people that don't get better, that try everything. And then they get to the point where, because the pressure is so strong, you got to the point where you thought you had to just stop running because you couldn't do anything about it, because you're trying to fit your life, your body into their paradigm that we obviously know is completely broken and backwards for the human animal. That's how strong, though. That's what I want people to realize. That's how strong that human persuasion and cognitive bias is. Okay. It is unbelievably strong. I mean, we have tons and tons of research of this in other fields, psychology, whatever. We even have research in medical and like you mentioned, we have low carb research or whatever. We have tons and tons of research, but you have cherry picking and you have dogma literally makes people blind. And so there's an Upton Sinclair quote that I always remind people of. He said, "Never expect a man to understand something if his salary depends on not understanding it." The hospitals that were supposed to be overwhelmed earlier this year, well, they weren't, right? Whatever. Like, and so it's just like, you can pull on any thread in anything that has billions of dollars at play. That's accepted by the masses. Anything that is common knowledge that the masses think, like, let's say the fat hypothesis, low fat, or how carbs are good, how grains are healthy, or all these ridiculous ideas that we have proven in my book, we've proven it. Because we have people like you. I've had Michaela Peterson. I have other people in the podcast that have literally reversed their health. To me, these people should be studied, right? And they should be in published peer-reviewed journals, but they're not. And they probably never will be because they're not following the academia, medical route or whatever. And they'll never get used as case studies. Like literally never. I have people on my YouTube channels that tell me, and you probably do, 50 pounds eating carnivore. I lost 50 pounds. 50 pounds is the difference between saving your life and probably dying in a few years. I mean, for some people like that.
Diabetes, like all kinds
exactly.
of things.
Yeah. It's incredible. But what I always, every time I get that comment, I get kind of sad because they're not ever going to be used as an end variable in an experiment. They're not going to be used as a data point to show us what the truth is. And that just, obviously when I talk about stuff, it just really boils my blood in a way. And maybe you want to comment on that?
Yeah, no, I totally 100% hear that, you know, and I experience the exact same thing. You know, when I interview people, they say like, I wish I would have known. And here it is. Like when I started to learn about low carb, when I had my health significantly shift, I was still working as a dietitian in the hospital. Hmm. And so, you know, I'm super excited about it. Like, I can help these people. I know better now. And I was told immediately, like, this is not the hospital that I like.
That should be against the law. I feel like that should be against the law. That should be malpractice. It just makes me so angry.
Yeah. And I even came and said, hey, look, I have these clinical trials here. Like, let me show you. I mean, like I said, we've been able to, in 8 days, we can start to resensitize the human body to insulin. You know, we can reverse diabetes in 2 weeks, but you know, if we heal you, we lose you as a customer. If we kill you, we lose you as a customer right in the middle. And so I'm not trying to brag about this, but I've been suspended twice just because I couldn't.
It is a brag to my audience. It's a brag. Good for you.
I never overheard and told and you know, but yeah, you have to just stay in line. But you know what? Here's what would hopefully be encouraging to your audience is I've had a lot of dietitians reach out to me and say, I hear you. I want to be part of this.
Yeah.
Scared because my hospital, just like every other hospital, won't allow me. But I'm hoping that as a dietitian, like getting this book out there can, you know, other people at least can read it. Can we get this conversation started? Can we start? Because sometimes it just takes somebody. And I know we have so many great people, like you said, Michaela Peterson and gosh, the Nutrition Coalition, Anina, why am I blanking on her last name?
Teichel. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of Amber O'Hearn, people that are saying like, we got to start talking about it. And so I'm hoping people, will read my book and say like, oh my gosh, a dietitian is saying this. I kind of feel this way too. Because I've talked to newer dietitians and they tell me, they're like, Michelle, I don't know what to do. And I was there too. Cause it's like, it's not cheap to become a dietitian. You know, you have your 4-year degree, you have student loans, you go through an internship.
Status quo bias. It's set up in a way to perpetuate it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so, you know, when I left healthcare, it was just like, holy cow, like I'm probably not going to be able to get a job where I make that type of money, but it becomes like, I couldn't be part of like my first thing in medicine, like do no harm. I was part of a system. And so it's like, I have to take a step back and I have to advocate for what I believe in. And I want to, you know, I want to help people. So, but yeah, dogma is very powerful. Like I've also shared that I've worked in now 4 different, cause I worked in 2 different psychiatric facilities and it's like shameful. I mean, we feed psychiatric patients. It averages about 325 carbs, about 38 teaspoons of sugar a day. Diabetics, about 225 grams of carbs a day. And that's, you know, but my dietitians, and the 4 places I've worked with, and this is not trying to shame or make fun of anybody, but 60% of the dietitians I've worked with are obese, not overweight, obese.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it in college, like the one course I went to, nutrition, she was overweight.
Yeah. And here's the deal. I talked to another podcast yesterday, and I think that what happens, you've accepted that dogma to be true. And you know, when we eat in this way, when we eat all these healthy whole grains, you're going to be storing fat. Well, you almost kind of accept this mediocrity. Well, it's just like, oh, just eat sugar in moderation. You know, I'm chubby, you're chubby, it's good. Like we start to accept this mediocre life. And I'm kind of worried that it almost becomes this like, this almost kind of like, I don't want to say like cult-like acceptance, but that's kind of what dogma
does. It's groupthink.
Bias to where, you know, like I said, I came to my clinical director and said, here are the trials, here are the studies, here's what I'm concerned about. You know, I pointed out to our medical director, I oversaw the rehab floor and not like drug rehabilitation, but like if you've been in a traumatic accident or burns, you know, you go to like get stronger. Mm-hmm. And I know terrifying trend, the people who were coming in who'd had a stroke. And I kept a percentage over the 3 months I was there because I just saw so much of it. People aged as young as 42 up to 68 were on statins. And so 68% of people that came in with a stroke were on statins. And, you know, I brought this to our medical director and they told me like when I got my medical license to come back, like basically just like get out of here, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really terrifying. And you said the medical profession, I think a lot of us, you know, most people that I talked to, I would actually say all people I've talked to, when you become a doctor, you become a nurse, you become anything in health, you genuinely want to help. Like mm-hmm. you get a system and it's so profoundly broken. I mean, you have so many people to see. You got 5 minutes to see somebody. To get insurance reimbursement, you have to chart for like half an hour. So you're not really even given time to help somebody. Mm-hmm. And then as a dietitian, I was just told like, as long as they're eating protein, calories, it's fine. If it's sugar water, it's fine. If it's Jell-O, it's fine. Like it starts to break you. So it's hard.
It's not going to change from the inside though. That's what people, you know, that's just unfortunately the way it is.
And that's what I really thought. That's why I thought we have to grassroots it. You know, yes. When I started my Instagram, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to start posting what I'm doing and try to advocate. And I'm just grateful that it's kind of started. Like there's a lot of like-minded people, you know, yeah. And I think mm-hmm. to get the message out, I think more people talking about it, but you're not going to see the medical industry change. Cause I think, you nailed it. I don't think people fully understand how much money, like, I think we kind of maybe know like, oh yeah, you know, there people make money off insulin and stuff. There is so much money.
Billion. We don't even know what $1 billion is. Like a billion. I think it's something like for human life. I think it's like 1 billion seconds is like 30 years or something.
Yeah.
Right. So we like all on average might, if we're lucky, have 3 billion seconds of life. 3 billion. Bill Gates, like 50 billion, right? Like we have no idea. The pharmaceutical industry and medical combined, that's got to be over hundreds of billions, like unbelievable amount. I think healthcare is like $1 trillion GDP for the United States. Like
yeah.
$1 trillion we can't even fathom. Again, the human mind can't even comprehend it. Like you're going to tell me that with that kind of money at play, that there's not an incentive. Like some people call it, oh, you're just being conspiracy theorists. Like, well, wait a second. Is there incentive? Is there at least incentive from a financial perspective? Yes, there is. Let's be clear on that. Is there a profit motive? Yes, of course there is, right? People love to demonize someone like Amazon because they think they're doing this or whatever. And it's like, even though they're just servicing customers, but they're not going to demonize big pharma and doctors because they think they're there to like help people. It's unbelievable. In fact, the reason that is because medical and pharma have been marketing billions of dollars, using marketing dollars for years to make the masses believe that doctors know everything and you should never question them. It's been built into marketing and research and cherry picking for years now. You know, and it's just, it's sad. So,
well, you know, in the Academy of Nutrition, you know, I always like to talk about this. They used to be called the American Dietetics Association. There's the governing board of all dietitians. I mean, their number one sponsors are PepsiCo, Frito-Lay. And I've been told over and over that it's like, oh no, it's fine. It's not a conflict of interest. It's like, and here's the thing, like somebody, a dietitian like emailed me and said, Michelle, you know, because I had mentioned that I thought this was a conflict of interest. They said, oh, I've never seen a dietitian go into a patient room and tell him to drink a Pepsi. And it's like, well, of course not. That's not what they're buying. You know, when they support the dietitians, they're not buying the fact that dietitians are going to go in and give a Pepsi. What they're buying is that dietitians, when the patient talks to you, you're going to be like, oh, it's fine. Have it in moderation. You know, it's no big deal. That's what moderation one. And number two is the human body can't regulate, you know, moderate carbohydrates. So
right, they're trying to sell the quantity versus quality, right? And everything we talked about with my light bulb moment was quality.
Yeah,
like if you have quality, quantity mostly doesn't matter because it takes care of itself. Like, tell me that you can just eat like 10 apples and stuff like steaks down your throat. Like your satiety kicks in well before it isn't even an issue. Right. Whereas processed, refined, highly palatable carbs, you can eat a whole bag and you're like, wait a second, why am I still hungry? This doesn't make any sense. Right. Like, it's like, oh man. I mean, Coca-Cola actually funded the organization. I believe they're called the Energy Balance Organization. And they're supposed to be like a nonprofit that promotes the idea that energy balance is all that matters. Right.
That's just the crazy. I think once again, I always encourage people to use common sense, critical thinking. Yep. And that's something so far away from. I think, you know, you see something posted on Facebook or Instagram and you're like, that's fact. But it's like the energy balance equation that says, like, if I have 500 calories of donuts, that's going to have the same effect on my body as 500 calories of steak. That doesn't use some critical thinking. I mean, it just,
common sense. Yeah,
it's really incredible. And it's interesting because, you know, nutrition in the dietetics community has really demonized things like meat and fat, you know, and it's like, those are the things that will keep us healthy. So they're telling us not to eat those things, but then they're saying, have this cereal, you know, General Mills is another number one sponsor, have this cereal and have this, you know, chips and have this, all this stuff. And it's just, it doesn't even make sense. And it just hurts my heart. But then you'll try to bring it up to other dietitians. And it's just, there's such a cognitive dissonance there. They can't get it.
Yeah, it's only when potential patients stop going or start demanding difference, and it's only when the market speaks, the free market, like just when the dollars aren't there anymore to give people pharmaceuticals and put them in medical, like, and I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, to be honest. In fact, my theory on this, which is probably a good place to close out, is that we're going to see, and this is maybe a 500 year time scale, I don't know, but we're going to see a divergence of humans, of the human species. We're going to see human, let's say 1.0, right? Like that is kind of getting sick in our modern environment. And we're going to see human 2.0 that is taking technology and the ability to cook food. And I mean, literally the ability to eat the perfect food every day. You can source it from all over the world. Our ancestors never had this ability. And we can use things like intermittent fasting, cold therapy, ice therapy, like meditation, mindfulness, the amount of things that a healthy, motivated person has to be healthy and to thrive and even to connect this to profession, making money and acquiring resources is it's the most the human animals ever had.
Absolutely.
But only a small percent of modern humans are taking advantage of this. They're just defaulting to what everyone is doing, the masses, let's say, and they're getting sick right alongside them. And so you're going to have a world where it's a literal Wall-E, where you have the Disney movie Wall-E, where everyone's overweight or whatever, and the little chairs run around. I think that the more likely scenario is if science doesn't somehow fix this. Maybe we will have an intervention. I don't know. Maybe science will somehow invent something where we can, you know, we can eat whatever we want and we can be healthy. That might happen, right? But for now, it's not in the cards. What's likely to happen is, unfortunately, this is a hard truth again, Homo sapien 1.0 that's going to keep devolving in our modern environment. Well, I mean, unfortunately, they'll devolve, they'll die off, their offspring will, this will happen over a long enough time scale. And you'll have Homo sapien 2.0. They will probably enslave human sapien 1.0. If you actually look at a long enough time scale. And it's actually really scary stuff. Like, you can get into sci-fi stuff, books written that have predicted this, right? Like the Red Rising, the Reds, the Golds, it's really scary stuff. But what bothers me the most about this is how the younger generation has no control over it. It's completely up to their parents. And if you have hundreds of millions of Americans that just either don't care or they're misinformed, some combination of the two usually, those kids are going to grow up in a terrible environment. Their genes and the epigenetics that we know are going to be haywire. And then they're going to grow up with eating disorders, mental problems, comparison problems from social media. They're going to get bullied. Like, it is quite literally the real virus of our society is the sickness of the mind and body of our society. And it's, you know, unfortunately this other virus has taken everyone's attention that shouldn't even be a thing. And it wouldn't have been a thing if the real sickness of society, mind and body, if that was taken care of, that other virus wouldn't even matter. So I think that's a good place to end. Any closing remarks?
Yeah, I share a lot of your, you know, similarities. I definitely worry about, you know, I've got nieces and nephews that this generation is, if we're not getting them the good high quality foods and we're not teaching them, like, one thing I absolutely actually probably worry about even more than the food is just the mental resilience. You know, this generation, I talk a little bit in my book, but the rate of bipolar disorder, anxiety and depression among our young people, you know, diseases of despair, people that are deaths of despair committing suicide is just off the charts. So yeah, I share your concern. I mean, I'm hopeful that we can continue this grass movement and we can just be part of the people that are leading the way. So thank you very much.
Yep. Appreciate you coming on as well and for going on your show as well. And all the links will be below on my end. I assume they'll be on your end too. So it's been a blast.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Hey, fellow human, Colin here. If you've been following me for any time now, you know that I've gone through a little bit of a transformation. I've been spending most of my time early on focused on helping people get better in their health, make better food decisions, lifestyle decisions, get outside, take walks, all that stuff. And that's led me to where I am today, where I've committed the second part of my life to help build better humans. Now, the first iteration of how I'm going to do that is a better human school, which I've been thinking about and really collectively putting the ideas together for the last 15 years of my life, basically my entire adult life, the things that I've learned, the big ideas that have served me time and time again, the things I've learned from loss, from struggle, from being sued, from just every possible thing that you can imagine happening and coming out a better, more resilient person. And I want to pass that along to other people to save them time, money, and a lot of suffering. That's going to make the world a better place. And each person that can get to that place and make better decisions and become the best version of themselves, the more they're going to lead by example. And we're going to have a ripple effect to other people and eventually, hopefully, to the masses. Because right now it's estimated that about 10% of Americans are considered metabolically healthy. 10%. And the reason I stopped spending so much time trying to get people to eat healthy and walk and get outside and do things that they know they need to do is because, again, most people know they need to do it, but they aren't doing it. Why is that? What are the limiting beliefs, the thought patterns, and the environmental factors that are keeping them from mastering their thoughts and thus mastering their life, their health, etc.? So if I can help people figure out how to master their life, how to take control of their thoughts, how to unlearn the really bad thought patterns that have been implanted in their minds through society and friends and family and their upbringing, then I can actually help people live better lives, become happier, and then they'll get the health part because they'll see the connection between better health, better living, and they will take it upon themselves to do it. They will get it done. And that's the power of controlling your thoughts, your emotions, and taking control of the moment and how you think and not just letting it run rampant or just responding to everything around you and just being a pinball in the game of life. So if you want to learn more about this, we have a pre-launch special. The first 250 students are going to get lifetime access to everything. I have big plans. You can watch the video there to learn about that and all the different things that we're going to do. But the core curriculum you're going to get lifetime access to, as well as the Zoom calls every week, the Q&A, the membership back end, and all the bonus stuff that I'm going to be adding on a regular ongoing basis as I bring experts in and we cover different topics from finances to living to health, just everything that is going to be in addition to the core curriculum. The core curriculum, though, is the foundations, the biggest first principles that you need on a daily basis. That's what you want to build your life from. Then you have the How to Think section, the How to Think 101, which are going to give you the biggest ideas of humanity that we've uncovered from philosophy and psychology. Then you're going to have the How to Live section, which are big ideas, again, from philosophy and the best books ever written and how to be successful as a modern human, a little bit of the current with the old combined together to make you a better human by giving you the ability and the tools to change the way you think to get the outcomes you want. Anything that you want in your life is going to come through your brain, your thoughts. If you take control of that, you can get there. If you don't take control of that, well, it's just pure randomness as to whether you're going to build the life that you truly appreciate and that you truly want. If you don't know where you're going, you might end up somewhere else, as Yogi Berra said. I'm going to help you figure out where you want to go and then give you the tools that'll get you there. So if you want to learn more or get started today, which I highly recommend you do, head over to betterhuman.school. That's betterhuman.school. And you can learn more. And if you have any questions or comments, you can always reply to this email or drop a comment or DM. You can find me. It's the internet. That's the world we live in now. And I'll be happy to chat with you, maybe even hop on a call if you're so inclined. And wherever you're at in life, wherever you're paying attention, I appreciate you following along. I hope you'll take some action with something that you learn through this program or through the 99% of the free content that I put out on a regular basis that I will continue to put out. And as always, I'll see you in the next one.
Please always remember that the members of the podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.